Bloom Shapiro, accounting, tax, and business advisors, maintaining an unwavering focus on your future so you can focus on what's most important to you, your business, in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Reston, Virginia, and Greater Boston. Step forward at BloomShapiro.com.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends, Larry Rifkin and John Krawczyk. And John, I know this is a topic that you understand firsthand today, and that is the fact that daycare is so important to so many young people in America, including your wonderful daughter.
That's right. I have my own daycare. I'm getting all sorts of stuff in my
Johnny's
house.
Daycare. Are you licensed? Certified?
Yes, certified, all right.
Well, what is it like, I mean, really, to provide daycare to... How old is your granddaughter?
She's 9 months now.
Now, what's it like? I mean, what do you do?
Well, it's, you know, it's different because I didn't have the time with my kids because I was so busy. It reminds me of the Harry Chapin song. You know, you're so busy that, you know, you're not there.
The cat's in the cradle.
Now I'm here, yeah.
And then it turns around,
yeah.
And they're too busy for you.
Exactly.
I'll tell you, Harry had another incredible line that I use often, and we were talking earlier about people moving during this pandemic or thinking they want to move on, and I'll always remember his line, you can travel on 10,000 miles and still stay where you are.
Yeah, it's another good one, you're right. But I mean, it's really fun because I didn't get to do a lot of the stuff with my kids that, you know, I'm doing with my granddaughter, so It's a nice change.
Really, well, is. You're having fun with it. A lot of people are struggling with it because it is the third or fourth highest expense for young couples. And let's be honest, many of these young couples who want to have children, but it's the last thing they do, and it's with some reluctance because what are the sacrifices? What are the compromises that one has to make?
And now you got the pandemic on top of it.
On top of it, so you're all on top of each other trying to work out of the house.
Yeah.
But beyond that, you've got this issue of can one person step away to raise the child, whether it's the man or the woman? And often women are making more than men these days
in
many households.
When we grew up, that's the way it was.
Well, it was, though my wife gave it up, but it was part-time, and then she went into other things, and then she fully went back as a physical therapist, got her master's, and then owned her own business. So she did defer. I mean, there's no question about it. She did. But now I think it's even more complicated because some of the women are more highly educated. Some of the women are making more money.
Right.
So now they really have to make that decision. So daycare has finally gotten on the national agenda as a real issue. This is no game that we're talking about here. And I remember, John, when I was on the Commission on Children here in our state of Connecticut, I recall, and I didn't understand it fully at the time, but there were business leaders here in our state who said, if there's one thing that we want to fund here in the state of Connecticut, the public sector, it's more early childhood education and daycare. So let's morph them into one to some extent. Because once you're 3 or 4 years old, there better be some stimulation going on at
right.
this facility to get these young people you know, not only socialized, but getting into the academic credentials of the future. Because that early start, and again, head start, of one of the most venerated programs we've had on the federal level for youngsters. So what are we going to do about it? And I know that Elizabeth Warren started talking about an agenda for young people. And when I talked to Florence Ann Romano, who we've had on before about this topic, I said, I'm convinced right now, or I'm convincing myself, that spending more money on early childhood education might be a better investment than spending it on colleges, because, first of all, we have a lot of young people in very difficult situations with one-parent families where if they don't get a head start, John, they're going to be lost forever. So maybe the investment should be in these days, and we can go forward and worry about the future and about college. But think about it this way, John. If you're a young couple, you don't have the resources that presumably you will have when your child needs to go off to college.
You're absolutely right. And the early years are probably, you're like you were saying, more important than the college years. And I think the college has got to change anyhow. I think we're putting too much of a financial burden on, and I think people are, during this pandemic, are rethinking that now, and because, I mean, it's crazy.
Well, let's be honest, John. This pandemic has moved forward certain movements by 5 to 10 years. Telemedicine, telecommuting, using online courses. So I think we are going to have a more robust set of options available that are cheaper going forward for college. But I don't think that you can duplicate virtually an experience that a daycare or an early childhood center has. They have to be there together. So we have a really interesting conversation. And anytime I talk to Florence, hi, Florence, if you're listening, I really like her so much. And she really allows me to engage with her, not just ask questions. And we have a lot of fun doing it. And I think we get a lot of information on the table for you about daycare, early childhood education, an important topic indeed in our society today.
Yeah, on America Trends.
With me on the line is Florence Ann Romano, a child care expert, and she's also called the Windy City Nanny. And Florence, you and I have spoken in the past, and it's always a delight to reconnect with you on America Trends. And today we're going to talk and focus on daycare. And I know that you, of course, are called the nanny. Now, when we think about the needs of parents today, most seem to need to go into a daycare setting, either in someone's home or in an institutional setting. But there's the nanny, too. I mean, what are the percentages, roughly, of how many people can afford a nanny versus those who need more traditional daycare?
Well, if you can believe it, the statistic is that over 64% of families in the United States today have childcare, a nanny or a babysitter or daycare. Can you believe that? 64%. And that statistic rises in line with the employment rate. So we're not seeing something that is a trend. This is part of our culture today. This is part of our society. Now, we are in extraordinary times where, you know, the employment rate is, you know, a little sticky at the moment. But, you know, we will go back to normal eventually. This is all temporary. So when you kind of wash aside the COVID-19 right now, we're still looking at a child care crisis in general, because the price of childcare is so extreme, and because in this country we don't have paid sick and family leave that is beneficial at this point, or even doing the job at this point for families.
Well, let's think about it, and let's put it into some context. We are spending more per child, I think, than ever before. Not only childcare, which is perhaps the highest rising expense, education, toys, games. But that in part is because, you know, when you think about it, Florence, you know, this is kind of the end of babies. I know, you know, that's a dramatic quote, but I had a demographer on recently who said every child born subsequent to 1985 has such greater value to the society than ever before because we're producing fewer, because many are trying to start out in their careers, women, and they're trying to get out from under debt and buy a home and get married. And maybe the last thing that they ultimately do is decide that they can have a child, and the impact of that on their job and on the cost of doing that.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that timeline. So I'm 34. I was born in 85, and I fall in.
Well, then you're worth a lot, Florence.
Well, there you go. I'm considered an old millennial. You know, they actually came up with a different term for those of us that are actually on the older side of that kind of pendulum here. But, you know, I am not married and I have no children. So being able to kind of be an illustration of that for you, it's not necessarily because I'm afraid financially to do it. And I wouldn't be afraid to do it on my own, truthfully. But I do understand why there are many people who are my age who would never choose to have children on their own because of the financial strain. And those that are my age who are married that think, oh my gosh, I don't know if I'm ever really truly going to be able to afford having more than one or maybe even two children just because of how expensive it is to raise children today. So I see that every day, validating what you said, that that is a truth that is going on in the world today. But on the flip side of the coin, you know, we need to provide a legacy in this country. You know, we need to be able to give birth to the next generation of influence and innovators and, you know, civic leaders and all of that. So we have to continue on with the human race in some way. So if we are afraid to have children and to keep that going, you know, how do we help alleviate those fears for the millennials? And I think that's what we're focusing on today in that sector is how do we make childcare.
Yes. Because when you look at it, I mean, we're really talking about one of the most serious issues in America. I mean, nothing grew faster than per-child spending on child care. I mean, I was reading that it grew by a factor of 21, or approximately what they consider 2,000% in the last 40 years. And let's be honest about it, Florence. In the past, we took this daycare or caring for children from an unpaid world of stay-at-home parents to salaried labor. It changed dramatically.
It changes dramatically also, I think, too, because people want to work now. You know, not that they didn't want to work then, but people are choosing to work. And, you know, in my work, you know, as a former nanny and consulting with families, I always feel that there's this shame and guilt that is attached to working mommies and daddies. And they think, oh my gosh, you know, I feel bad. I don't necessarily need to work because my spouse makes enough for us to survive, but I want to work. And then that starts opening a whole new problem, you know, where it starts lending itself to these statistics that you're saying about, okay, why is childcare growing like that? Why is daycare growing like that? Well, it's because people have to work or are choosing to work in a two-person household or in a single-parent household. So that's why you're seeing those stats jump so much. But the common denominator, Larry, is what do we do then with these statistics growing? How do we make it possible for families to afford it? Because oftentimes now you're seeing someone work just to pay for the daycare. That one salary is going toward the daycare.
Does well, I read a statistic somewhere, where I think about half of what one of those in a family makes is going toward daycare. And, of course, a lot of this ramp-up started, as you say, when, again, women went into the workforce. They are really excelling in the workforce. In fact, many of the male-related industries like construction and others, you know, have faded a bit during different periods of time, and the women are often the, major breadwinner in a family.
And isn't that a wonderful thing to see? I mean, as a woman, I love seeing, you know, women be these amazing boss ladies. It's fantastic. But the common denominator here is that no matter what, whether or not it's men and women both going to work and rocking it, it's the fact that we need childcare to be accessible for everybody. And that's something that you're hearing Democrats, Republicans talk about so much right now. When you're watching all these debates, or when you're reading the newspapers, there's this common theme that they're all addressing about childcare and about the childcare crisis and about paid leave for families. And it's funny, if you look at the bill that just passed, the Families First Act that the president signed this past week, it's an interesting glimmer into what it would look like if we were to put in place in America a policy for paid and sick leave in this country that we hadn't really seen before. At least when I read it, it started to get me thinking, is this the first tiptoe into seeing the country take this course?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because what is a crisis? I mean, we should have seen this as a coming crisis over the last couple of decades. And I want to throw this by you, Florence, because last time we spoke, we had a wonderful, as we are today, a wonderful conversation, almost more of a conversation than an interview. But when I hear everybody talking about free college, and I understand that, given how much expenses related to college have grown, but let's turn that upside down. Just as the demographics in America have turned upside down, and you referred to this earlier, where we have this inverted pyramid of many older people and fewer younger people, we've never had that, I don't think, in the history of our nation, perhaps mankind. But now, let's turn this around. Why don't we invest more on the preschool side, where business leaders and others have fed for years? I was on the Commission on Children in my state. I'll never forget a bank president saying, this is where the investment needs to take place. So instead of free college, when in fact these parents would have gotten out from under debt, they would have had successful careers, the child is now 18 and can get more loans and more support, that we think about supporting them more on the front end than the back end.
Yeah. I would 1,000% agree with that. You know, I have my own feelings about what free college looks like, and I don't necessarily think that's the answer either for our country. I don't think free is usually the answer. There's usually someone paying for something when you say free, and where is that coming from, and how does that balance out? So free college, no. More accessible college, more affordable college, yes. Investing on the front end, 100%, 1,000%, 1,000,000%, to put it that way. You know, we see so many studies out there regarding the benefits and the very imperative nature of investing in your children's education from the beginning in preschool and even before, when those minds are forming. I mean, they say that past the age of two, it gets harder for kids to be able to learn another language already. Past the age of two. I mean, unbelievable. So, I mean, you think about the cognitive development of children and what you need to do with them at home and what you're hoping is done for them in school. I agree. Let's absolutely front load that for families to give these children a chance at being these very successful creatures down the road. I do think we would see a shift in our country, a shift in our society, a shift in these generations, if we were able to put the money toward that.
Yeah, and maybe women in our society who still hold the greatest burden as it relates to child rearing, that they would feel freer than to go back into their careers, get them started, and they can make more money so that by the time college comes, that may not be the same issue it is today. By the way, there was a wonderful article in The Atlantic by Derek Thompson, and I want to reference him because I think he gives three really important reminders of why these costs have gone up. And I'd love to run them by you and get your reaction, Florence, if that's okay. Well, first he said that although these child care workers that we're talking about aren't really that expensive, and many times we've heard about that they are not compensated in the way that they should on an hourly basis, that in fact, it really is expensive to run a child care facility. And he's saying that unlike, say, car companies, they can't cut spending by moving labor to poorer countries or by replacing human workers with machines. Like healthcare and education, child care requires a lot of domestic salaries, which means that a cost will continuously rise faster than overall inflation. And I had never really thought about that. You really need human beings interacting. And of course, the second piece of that is that they are highly regulated in many states. So you don't want one child or 10 children with one worker. Many states require a 3-to-1 or a 5-to-1 ratio. Mm-hmm. So that's another reason why these costs are dramatically rising.
Isn't that even scary to think of 5 children to 1 adult? I mean, would you want to be in that situation with 5 children and 1 adult? Imagine they were 5 infants, 5 newborns that you had to take care of. I mean, when you start to break that down into what that could look like, that is an unbelievable amount of responsibility. And so when you think of how much these daycare providers are not making, because they're not, the average is around $10 an hour, versus when you look at nannies are usually making at least about $20 an hour. And when you're actually comparing what the nannies do and what daycare providers do, I don't feel that there's a huge amount of difference there. They're both still operating under the same mantra, which is to protect and take care and provide for those children. And so we need to even the playing field there. I think that's probably a topic for a different time. But I would agree with this gentleman about what he's saying. Running a business like a daycare is not running necessarily, you know, a corporate America regular company that you would like pop into your mind in terms of what overhead looks like or things like that. You can't really scale back. And so would you want to, though, either?
Heavily regulated, which I think we want. I mean, we really don't want kids in dangerous situations, so they have to respect those standards in the various states.
Right.
Finally, the other piece, because I said there were three, so we start with the fact that it's very personnel-oriented, then it's highly regulated, and then there's a lot related to real estate, that you have to have ample square footage, and much of that square footage is in places, say, in New York City, where you've got a lot of professional women, and daycare, of course, is an important option for so many to continue their careers. You know, that's very expensive real estate.
It's extremely expensive real estate, especially if you're noting New York, where everything is expensive. I mean, it's maybe different in rural Iowa, where you're looking at daycare there. But again, the common denominator there is that it should be regulated. And I want to go back to that just for a second, because when you're talking about real estate, not everybody's playing by the rules, Larry. You know, that's something to mention here. You know, people are having in-home daycare, and are they actually being regulated? Are they actually following the rules about how many kids they are able to take care of legally? No, I would say not everybody is playing by those rules. But when you're looking at families who are desperate to have childcare and they don't have the means maybe to pay for that traditional daycare, they're turning to alternative measures. And are those the safest measures? Are those the regulated measures? Probably not. I'm not saying that those children are not safe and not loved, but in certain cases, that might be true that they're not safe. So I think we have to open our minds up a little bit more and also realize that these might be the rules that exist, but does everybody play by the rules?
Yeah, that's a great point.
We'll be back with more of this America Trends podcast in 30 seconds. At Bloom Shapiro, New England's largest independent business advisor, discovering what makes you different is what makes us different. Our partners are true business advisors, listening, analyzing, asking the questions no one else asks, creating solutions no one else can, anticipating your future goals and drafting plans to make sure you get there. Because at Bloom Shapiro, achieving your success and satisfaction is how we measure ours. Step forward at BloomShapiro.com.
Florence Ann Romano is with us, a child care expert, and she has been called the Windy City Nanny, so you know she's emanating from the Chicago area. You know, in this same article that I was referring to in The Atlantic, he says, and I'll quote, "The state of American child care might be defensible if it were expensive and high quality, or if it were crummy but cheap." Instead, the U.S. has the worst of both worlds. Cadillac prices for an Edsel product, the typical family paying for any child care, spends about 10% of their income on it, far more than in most similarly rich countries. But American daycare, according to him, is a shambles. The overall quality is wildly uneven and barely monitored, and at the lower end, it's Dickensian. So that's exactly what you were suggesting, that we, in many cases, you know, kind of close our eyes and we don't know exactly what's going on in a home environment. Now, Florence, I know a woman, and she's really incredible. I mean, she's fastidious, she's attentive, compassionate. She's been doing it for about 20 years, having a daycare operation in her own home. And I know that she treats her children just like her own, but, you know, I can't say that that is replicated everywhere.
Well, we don't know that it's replicated everywhere, and the truth is it probably isn't. You know, I'd like to think that everybody is following the rules and regulations regarding daycare, especially those that are having daycare in their homes, but that's not the truth. And how do we regulate those that are having daycares in their homes and not using maybe a private company or a private institution for it? Like you said, you know someone who is wonderful and they're absolutely leaning into their calling in life and loving these children and protecting them. But how do we protect the ones that, you know, aren't necessarily within the correct walls and being taken care of correctly? So that's a larger question, I believe, about how do we fix regulating child care in this country, and how do we get our government behind it? And that's really what the thesis statement is here, is how do we get the government involved and say, hey, you have to look at this, because this isn't just a small part of the population that's being affected. Again, this is 64% of our families in America today have child care. So let's make sure that these kids are properly being cared for so that their parents have peace of mind. You know, this is no longer a topic that we can just ignore. This is something that has to be on the tables and on the desks of Congress. And
I agree with you. But you know yourself that sometimes we come to government solutions pretty late, often later than other countries. And in many cases, we've got to be prodded by the private sector. In this case, Florence, Apple and Google, now they seem to be stepping up to provide the backup child care, because they're recognizing that women are a huge part of the knowledge economy workforce. And as I said, if you're born in 1985 or later, young people who are going to innovate us into the future, I mean, you're so valuable to us. So this is not child's play any longer. But, you know, you don't feel comfortable if you're a woman, I would imagine, or even a man, going to work with no adequate daycare. You might have to step aside for a while, and America is not going to benefit if you're not in the workforce at that time. So we have to truly look at this daycare situation as really not just a frill anymore. This is a commodity, and we've got to really be focused on it in a way that I don't think we have been as a society today.
We haven't been as a society focused on it, because it's kind of been this underground conversation. It's being brought to the forefront of America today for lots of different reasons. And, you know, a pandemic is not the reason why you should be bringing up childcare and finally taking it seriously. But maybe it was that brought it to the surface. I believe the Family First Act that was passed in Congress, it's starting to really nudge things along in terms of paid family and sick leave. And I guess it took something global for us to take a look at that. But I also think that people, they start these movements on their own. You know, they think, okay, government's not doing anything about it right now, so I'm going to do something about it. So these companies, like you said, Google and Patagonia, they're making sure that their employees feel valued and know that their personal lives are also very valuable to them, that they are better workers, they are better assets to that company if they are, as a whole, as a family, taken care of and respected and honored. So I agree with what these companies are doing wholeheartedly, and I do believe they started a movement in the private sector because of it.
And, of course, there are some other private innovations. I was reading about Wonder School, an Airbnb-like arrangement for neighbors, and they're getting together to develop a daycare, not waiting for the government. They've been slow to act. And now, of course, as you mentioned, we have these temporary leave provisions during this recent time of crisis that may lead to more permanent solutions. But it's interesting to me that this is the first presidential campaign where I've heard about this five-year policy. Elizabeth Warren had an idea on the table for $2 trillion of national child care to develop the system. And it takes time for this to get into the body politic, but I do think it is beginning to happen.
It is beginning to happen, and I'm so happy to see, you know, candidates speaking about it in a very bipartisan way. Everyone seems to agree, and the common denominator is that family leave needs to be addressed. Now, the way that they all believe it should be addressed is not the same. The way they think it should be paid for is not the same. Therein lies the democracy. It's interesting to see, though, that they do have a common thought in mind. And that means, if you think about it, that the movement toward family leave based on the private sector, based on the individual passion of people regarding getting this into the forefront of people's minds is working. It works because people are talking about it at a national level in a, you know, general election year. And I think that's very cool. And like you mentioned, Wonder School, these co-working spaces that are making it a possibility for moms especially to be able to go to these co-working spaces and have childcare. Like, for example, in Los Angeles, there's a co-working space called the Jane Club, affectionately named after Jane Addams. Mm-hmm. They have a childcare situation there that they've coined the Nest, and they can pay a membership fee to be a part of this club, and with that comes childcare. So you're seeing people do this, as again, part of this movement, they're taking matters into their own hands. Pretty cool to see.
Now, I know I mentioned years ago I was on the State Commission on Children in my state, and it was interesting because then business leaders were all talking about this and the importance of it. And if you go back to 2015, and I know this won't surprise you, but the Council of Economic Advisors indicates that every dollar spent on early childhood education results in $8.60 in societal benefits, about half of which is in earnings when they grow up. And then there was this Harvard study last year, and it concluded that the direct investment in low-income children and their health and education have delivered the biggest bang for the buck. Now, these, again, are revelations to some, but to business leaders, I think they've known this for some time.
Of course they've known this for some time because they're seeing it firsthand. They know who their assets are, what their assets are. And to take that into kind of a different light, when you invest in the child, when you invest in childhood education and putting the emphasis on them as the future, which they are. They've said for many years in many songs that children are the future, and aren't they? Isn't that the thing that continues to be proven true? But how we prepare them for that future that we want for them, that we so desperately want for them, that changes year to year. And I like seeing more and more articles and more attention on the fact that children should be invested in from the front end and making sure that we're giving them the resources they need in order to be able to attain the future that we dream of for them. But here's the irony. They can only have that future if we build it for them. So we need to be an active part of why these kids are going to have that future. And it starts now. I mean, it starts now more than ever, us having these conversations about why we need to invest in kids and invest in childcare.
And we've heard that there's an advocate in the White House in Ivanka Trump about these kinds of issues. We're also dealing, of course, with this gap in educational attainment between white and black students. It's interesting, Florence, that I did another podcast where after 50 years and all kinds of efforts that have gone on, new kinds of arrangements with magnet schools and the like, and lots of emphasis and dollars placed on it, we still have this achievement gap that we're talking about. And some people say that this underinvestment and under stimulation at a very young age, particularly for kids where education is not the primary concern, maybe just getting by is, or maybe it's single parents, what have you, that this is important to give them a head start, as we've known head start to be, and a jump start, and that that's part of the equation that we're talking about here.
I think it's very interesting when people bring up children that don't have access to what maybe a majority of society might. And again, to use your terminology, you know, the marginalized community. What I truly believe, though, is that we can help fix that through putting family leave first, because if we're going to help a majority of children, we will probably be able to help all the kids. Not, you never can have 100%, but you will be able to help most of the kids then if you're going to have actual laws in place to help them achieve these things. But, you know, the achievement gap that you're talking about, the underinvestment that's made in this marginalized community, it has to do with priorities. It has to do with resources as well. So if it's a resource problem and we need to turn to our state and federal government in order to help permeate that, help be able to wash it through us as a national in a national way, I should say, then we're going to start to see those numbers change. But we kind of have to write these laws thinking of the global aspect of it and the national aspect of it, and then see how that permeates all of these different demographics, I would say.
Well, just to wrap up, I want to go back to that Derek Thompson article that I referred to in The Atlantic. And he's saying that this is a pressing public policy issue that needs to find its way up the list of national priorities. And he ends his article by posing this salient question, I think. Can U.S. families afford to adequately care for their own children, while suggesting that a great question? He goes further with an even better question. Can the U.S. afford not to? And perhaps this is the first time someone listening to this podcast has really thought about daycare and early childhood education in this economic and societal light. And rest assured that if you're listening to this podcast, you are going to be hearing a lot more about this going forward. I don't think, Florence, there's any sense that this issue is going away. If anything, I think it's going to be more prominent as the value of our children in a society like ours continues to rise. Because when you look at it, the birth rates here in America last year in 2019 were at their lowest point in a century. So that makes every child born more valuable to us.
I couldn't have said it better myself, and I love that article. I love that quote. We cannot afford not to look at it. I love a double negative. That's my favorite, too. That means you're really making a good point. But the truth is, the birth rate, you know, we talked earlier about how millennials are not having children, and the answer to the question, or the solution, rather, to fixing that is fixing it at a federal and state level, making family leave a part of this conversation, a part of our country in terms of actual law. We'll see that birth rate change. We'll see millennials have kids. We'll see that start to tick up and up and up, because people will be able to afford it. They will be able to feel that it is an attainable dream. Right now, it doesn't feel attainable to a lot of people. And the way to fix it is through law, is through making it accessible for all. And so I'm very anxious to see how things change. I think a year from now, Larry, when we're having this conversation, I think we'll have made progress. So we'll have to check in a year from now on this.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how U.S. priorities change in the wake of all that we've been going through. But
right.
I want to thank you, as always. We're talking about nothing less here, folks, than the future. And that's pretty important, I'd say. Florence Ann Romano, the Windy City Nanny. And you can see what she is up to at all times on windycitynanny.com. And I can't thank you enough for being with us here on America Trends.
Pleasure is all mine.
America Trends podcast is part of the MHNR Network. MHNRnetwork.com. At Bloom Shapiro, New England's largest independent business advisor, discovering what makes you different is what makes Bloom different.